Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, live from the Right Side studio. We got the local, we got the state, we got the national. We're covering all the issues down here. Solid conservative and just plain right. Man, this show goes all the way south of Birmingham to north of Huntsville, from Tuscaloosa to Gaston, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi. All thrown in just for good measure. And no, even though I did that introduction perfectly, this is not Phil Williams filling in today. I hate to disappoint. I don't know if you could tell, like I said, from the perfect intro and the perfect intro voice that I put on there to sound just like Phil. This is JP filling in for the show today. Phil is off doing some important stuff, doing some speaking engagements, and just the usual stuff like that. But we got a good show for you today. This is JP, like I said, filling in. I'm tagged alongside with Emily Hayes from the Dale Jackson Show every single day up at WVNM from 5 to 9 a.m. weekdays. Emily, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, JP. I do miss your presence here, though.
Oh, well, that's... Emily reminded me today that we actually used to work together. I don't really... I kind of recall that, but I guess it's in the back of my mind somewhere back there.
So long ago.
I know. But how's everything?
So long ago, we used to suffer through this together, and now you've left me.
You know, I have to say, I don't miss the crack of dawn drives up to the Cumulus Station, the 40-minute drives. Now I get to wake up, where the sun's already up, and then drive a good 5 minutes down to the station, and I'm there.
What is that like?
Yeah, I know. You have even a longer drive than I did when I was up there. Yeah, I don't miss those early mornings, but I do miss Dale Jackson's voice every now and then because, whether you like it or not, it was entertaining.
Like it.
I know, right? It's like, there's nothing like a bright early morning and then listening to Dale Jackson in your ear with that voice of his, but anyways, how's everything been going up there at Cumulus nowadays without my presence there? Has the station burned down yet?
No, you are missed for certain, but Kelsey's doing his best to pick up the slack and train our new guy, Ray.
Right.
You've got to meet Ray. He's got a very distinctive laugh, and he's been in studio three times now. The last two times he's been training on the board and things like that. And since he's closer to the board, whenever he gets tickled about something and he laughs, it's starting to kind of filter through the microphone. And we've had a couple of listeners text in about it.
About this this laugh in the background.
Yeah, this is nothing you've ever heard before. It's uniquely Ray.
I find it funny how I asked how things are going, and then you said Kelsey's doing his best. That was a little subtle diss on Kelsey there. I like that.
No, that was funny. Poor Kelsey, he's not a morning guy, but he stepped up to the plate and he's here and he's getting it done. Dale would say he's perfectly adequate. I say he's given it the old college try and we are appreciative.
Perfectly adequate, yes. I was called that many times. I feel like that's the perfect Dale compliment right there.
Perfectly adequate.
Yeah, he's not going to tell you you're doing a good job. He'll tell you you're perfectly adequate, which and that on top of insults is a compliment from him. So, if he's insulting you, that also means he likes you. So, but other than that, in the we got a bunch of stuff going on in the world of politics. As you know, the election is 12 days away now. 12 days away. Yeah, I know, right? It's kind of snuck up on me.
It seems like it just came out of nowhere.
I know, right? Like, I haven't seen it talked about anywhere or anything. But apparently,
who's running?
Yeah,
who's running?
I couldn't tell you. But we got an election in about 12 days, and it's very interesting. I've felt a huge momentum shift here. I don't know what happened, or let me say it this way. I don't know what in particular caused the shift of momentum from Kamala to Trump, but I feel like even people on the left can't deny that Kamala's honeymoon period that lasted about 2 months after she was propped up as the candidate slowly waned, and then it turned into recently Trump just taking the reins of this election, it feels like. And if you don't believe me, I mean, the polls say it, the betting markets say it, say whatever you want about the betting markets. I mean, that's there. I put it as that's polls with money behind it. So some people could even argue that means more than polls because people are putting their actual money behind it. But it's been crazy. And the whole McDonald's Trump, thing that happened this week where he went and served fries and gave food out the window, like stuff like that is like, it's crazy to me. It's crazy that is. It's just funny to me that we had Donald Trump in a McDonald's doing that.
I think it was great. I think McDonald's response to it was great. Did you see the internal memo that was leaked?
No, I did not. No.
Yeah, there was an internal memo from McDonald's to, you know, the higher-ups or whatever, the owner, operators, and franchisees and things like that, that said, look, it was basically, it was really well done. Like, 100 A-plus on corporate communications, because it basically boiled down to this. We had an owner, operator reach out to us and let us know of this opportunity that he had. And their tagline, or the main point of the whole thing, was we represent everyone in America. We are not red. We are not blue. We're golden. And what a perfect marketing strategy there, if they ever decided to roll with that. We're not red, we're not blue, we're golden. Yes you are, you beautiful golden arches and crispy salty fries. Perfect. Just steer clear of the Big Macs.
Yeah, well, I mean at least on this show, the talk of McDonald's fries after that happened, we talked about it for almost a whole segment, I feel like, and then that translated to other food conversations. So I feel like, you know, that was a great marketing move on their end. Not just, obviously, you have Trump working there, but now everybody's talking about McDonald's fries, and then everybody's craving McDonald's fries.
And you know that internal memo is going to get leaked. Like, they knew that. They have to know that. You always have to have that in the back of in your mind, whatever you put down on paper, whatever words you put down on paper and send out to your staff, to anyone in your company, even if you say it's an internal memo, you know, do not share outside of the McDonald's realm or whatever, you know it's going to get shared.
Yeah.
You know, if Cumulus sent down something that was absolutely ridiculous, you think Dale Jackson would just send it?
Yeah, he would be saying, you know, he would be bringing it up the next day on the show. But no, it's funny too how people are like, oh, that's so staged. It's such a staged thing. It's like, no duh.
Of course they're
going to put the former president into a McDonald's. You know, they're just going to send him on his way to work a shift. Like, obviously that was staged, people.
Yeah,
like,
that
was the whole bit.
You put him in there during the rush. You don't want a new crew member in on the rush with the line backing up and the drive through all the way out into the street. It's not a good scenario.
Yeah, but that whole bit has, you know, the memes have been everywhere, and it's been quite funny. What's even been funnier, in my opinion, like I said, is the Democrats having a meltdown over it and attacking McDonald's for it, and then, you know, it's just like, come on, people. Like,
it's a meltdown because they didn't think of it first.
Yeah, and you can smell the desperation from the whole party at this point, because, you know, these polls right here, these are polls from Real Clear Politics, which, like I said yesterday during Right Side, this is a Real Clear Politics encompasses a bunch of different polls of, you know, like 50 to 80 different polls. You have some are biased one way, some are biased the other way, but then there's also a bunch that are, you know, pretty objective. So although there may be some biases in there that may skew it a hair, I feel like there's enough on the opposite spectrum and then enough objective ones to where I feel like these are pretty reliable. Trump right now, 2.2% lead in Georgia, 0.8% lead in North Carolina, 0.7% lead in Nevada, 0.2% lead in both Michigan and Wisconsin, and then he's got a 0.6% lead in Pennsylvania right now. The Hill is forecasting he has a 52% chance to win, and the Wall Street Journal, these two right here were crazy to me. The Wall Street Journal currently has him up 3 points in the national poll, and the CNBC has him up 2 points in the national poll. Those are not two conservative outlets right there. I mean, some maybe argue that they're left-leaning, and they got Trump up 3 and up 2, not in, you know, to win the election, but national polls. That's a national poll that they have him up 3 and up 2. That is crazy.
Yeah, but I say you approach this stuff with cautious optimism, though, you know, because there's always the margin of error.
This race is very much a toss-up still in a lot of states.
Yeah, I can't say I feel about this any way that I've ever felt about an election before, but it just makes me think of how in 2016, I've shared this story on the Dale Jackson show, but in 2016, I didn't vote for Trump, I didn't vote for Hillary, but I went to bed believing that I would wake up the next morning and Hillary Clinton would be the president-elect, just because of the media coverage and polls, all the polls, everything was showing it was her. So color me surprised when I wake up and they're like, it's Donald Trump. And you're just, what just happened? So ever since then, I look at these with a much different lens. I look through when I think of polls and things like that, because I don't know how to explain how convinced I was that I was going to wake up and Hillary Clinton was going to be the president-elect, because I was believing everything the media was telling me. Well, and I was in media. I was on News Talk at the time, too. And I had Trump fatigue from covering everything. I had election fatigue and all that stuff. Shocker.
Yeah. Well, I look at it this way. If Trump outperforms the polls as much as he does, and the fact that he has, well, first of all, the fact that he even has a lead, but even the fact that it's close in Nevada, where some people were saying that was the Democrats' safest battleground state, and right now he has a 0.7% lead. I mean, not only that he has a lead, the fact that it's even close in Nevada is crazy, because if he's going to outperform the polls like he has before, then that's worrisome to Democrats. And I think their desperation and their panic is starting to show a little bit. But we got to take a quick break real quick right here. We went a little hair long, but we'll be right back, and we're going to dive into some more of our predictions and our thoughts of the state of the race as a whole. I feel like that's what most of the show is going to be, is, you know, our thoughts on the state of the race and where we think things are right now, because, like I said, 12 days away, it's coming right up on it. So make sure to stay tuned here on Right Side Radio. This is JP and Emily. Help fill in for Phil today, so make sure to keep it locked right here. We'll be right back. And we are back, Right Side Radio, here with JP and Emily. No Phil Williams today, unfortunately, but you're stuck with us, but we got a great show for you today. I mentioned, Emily, there was no Phil monologue today, so there was no, text dump from the monologue. I swear he gets about 10 people every day saying, Colonel, excellent monologue. Phil, excellent monologue. Phil, spectacular monologue.
I've been one of those people, so careful there, buddy. Because Phil's just got such – Phil's super talented, first of all. He's an excellent public speaker as well, but he's also very moving in the way he presents his life experiences and in his relationships with different organizations and people. And just Phil's got a phenomenal – lens he looks through life with.
Oh no, I agree 100%. You know, I think about those people out there that tune in every day to hear his monologue, and they were disappointed.
I will not insult the Right Side listeners by trying to pull off a powerful Phil Williams monologue.
Maybe we should have done that. Maybe we should have tried our best to recreate the monologue. It would have been a disaster. We should not.
We'll have to do it next time, and we'll do an ode to Phil Williams.
We have a text here from JT from Lacey Springs, though. He says, be wary of the polls. It may be a left pollie trying to deceive the right into thinking they don't need to vote. Nothing could be less true. Well, I agree 100% that no matter what the polls say, you need to get out and vote, because this is still a tight race. And although the momentum has shifted into Trump's court, I would say this is still a tight race nevertheless. And even if it wasn't a tight race, I mean, every single citizen that can vote should vote and exercise the right to do so. So do not think, you know, it's going to go one way or the other, or that you shouldn't participate in voting, because that could not be further from the truth. But
I think that's come to bite people in the butt before, too. Like, maybe, you know, is that what happened with Hillary? I know there's whole, like, she wrote a book, What Happened, or whatever. But I think when you're told someone's doing so well, it takes away the urgency for you to get out there and support them. If polls are showing that someone's going to win in a landslide, then what is your motivation to go out there and vote? Because then you get in that mindset of, I'm just one vote.
Yeah. And, you know, it's either way, you know, whether you think your person's going to win or not, you know, I feel like that shouldn't even be the point of voting. You know, the point of voting is, you know, people have died for your right to do that. And a lot of people around the world don't have the freedom to go and express their opinion. So no matter the state of the race, I feel like it is crucial for every single citizen to exercise their freedom to vote, because not everybody has it. And a lot of people died for that freedom. So we have a text from John Paul, too, that said, I'm glad to see that the king of Gen Z and the queen of millennials have once again reunited the prophecy. Also, did you hear that Trump has a 2-point edge over Harris nationally? Yeah, it's pretty nuts. I mean, some of the battleground polls have surprised me, but I have to say the national polls being how it is, surprised me even more, I would say. And then he also asked, Emily, are you a Taco Tuesday kind of woman or a Tater Tuesday kind of woman?
Mm-hmm. I'm a Taco Tuesday person. I think Tater Tuesday has its place, though, especially in the cooler months. But yeah, I'm a Taco Tuesday person.
Yeah.
Because margaritas, that's it.
Yeah, because of the margaritas. I love Mexican food. It's probably like my favorite genre of food.
It's always a good go-to. It's so, you know, the menu, very diverse, very diverse.
He also said, if it's a fair election, Trump will win because Kamala's policies are terrible and her character is also terrible. And I also think that most women would prefer a man as president over a woman. Well, there's that text. He also said an Emily monologue would be spectacular, says John Paul from Huntsville. So
I don't know, my friend. I do not know.
Chef Ben from Aniana says, well said, get out and vote. What a glorious privilege. Indeed it is. And, you know, it's, you know, well, like I said earlier, the polls being how they are, it's interesting to look at from, you know, state like Alabama, where, you know, nobody's going to be sitting up and waiting to see what Alabama's elections are. You know, Alabama's going to go Trump, and it's going to be, you know, one of the safer states on either side. But, you know, it's interesting just to take a look at and kind of get a gauge on where things are in the battleground states, you know, because those are the states where the election is going to come down to. But nobody should look at those polls from a standpoint of, oh, should I vote? Will my vote count? Is it, you know, nobody should look at it from that standpoint. You know, polls are just sort of a gauge of, you know, from people, you know, just to see where the election is. But I'm also interested to see if these polls will be, you know, how correct will they be? Because polls have gotten a lot of heat because they were so wrong about the 2016 election. But if we come out of this and the polls were pretty dang close, you know, they could be, you know, people could be gaining their faith back into them. But nevertheless, they never should be a gauge for anybody to see if they should go out and vote or not. I mean, you should get out and vote no matter what the polls say. And, you know, but like I said, with the polls, though, I'm very interested to see how close they are, because a lot of dirt's been thrown on them. If they are close, I would love to see polls to be something to, you know, something reliable again, because
yeah,
I like watching
too.
Them.
I feel like they are this time, just because if you objectively look throughout the country, just how close it is. You know, there are people that have Trump fatigue, but can't deny the work he did in our country and for our economy especially. And there are people that can't deny that maybe Biden is a bit nicer to deal with than Trump. But then you have to think of, well, do I want Biden being nice to everyone and not defending and protecting our country the way he should? Or do I want the mean tweets at 2 a.m.?
Yeah, and I'll end off with this. Ronnie from Danville says, if you don't vote, don't complain. So that pretty much sums it up right there. All right, well, we're going to get into more of this and this upcoming election and our thoughts on the state of the race right now here on the other side. So make sure to keep it locked right here on Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back here on Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. This is JP here helping fill in for Phil Williams alongside with Emily Hayes from The Dale Jackson Show every weekday mornings from 5 to 9 a.m. up on WVNN in Huntsville. I want to talk about something, though, because, Emily, I know me and Phil have talked about this on here on Right Side, but I don't know if y'all have discussed this on the Dale Jackson Show much at all. Kamala turning down Joe Rogan is something that is very fascinating to me. And that on top of Trump deciding to go on Joe Rogan, which, you know, to some people, it may not seem like a big deal that that's happening, but Joe Rogan is the number one podcast in the world. And it's I guarantee you a lot more people listen to that on a regular basis than, you know, the mainstream media. Now, I don't have any stats pulled up to you know, back that up, but that would be my, I would say an average Joe Rogan podcast, you know, listener base competes with mainstream media, if it doesn't beat it. And this episode with Trump, I guarantee you will demolish, you know, the average numbers from, you know, mainstream media. All that to say, this podcast is very influential. It will go a long way for either candidate to go on there and express their policies and to put themselves out there for people to see them, because that is such a massive, you know, base of people. And we're this close to the election that, you know, if you're Kamala and you seem to be slipping in the polls, which is out there, the numbers are out there, you can't really argue that. Why would you turn down going on Joe Rogan to help save that? I think what that shows is the campaign has such little trust in her and her, you know, ability to handle the media, and Joe Rogan being, you know, I wouldn't say loose cannon, but they can't really control Joe Rogan and what he asks. And I feel like that right there, her not going on Joe Rogan, not only shows desperation, but it shows how bad of a candidate she really is. They can't even trust her to go on such a large platform like Joe Rogan, because they worry that she's going to fumble that bad.
Well, I think the problem there is that Joe Rogan would not let it be a 2-hour bash Trump fest. He would push for explanation of policy, explanation of past performance, all the flip-flopping that she's done. He would want answers, and I think he would stick to getting some kind of answer out of her that is not the, you know, explain your position on the economy, explain how your plan is going to fix the economy. I grew up in a middle-class household.
Yeah.
Nobody asked you that, Kamala. We want to know what your plan is. Give us the plan. Don't give us the talking points. Don't give us the highlights. Just very succinctly tell us how the $25,000 first-time homebuyer down payment assistance program is actually going to work in layman's terms. Because that's the thing. They fill up so much time with all the extra words. With, you know, we don't have to have all the big words. Just get in, get out. Tell us what's going on. Tell us how you're going to fix it. Let us decide. But they can't do that. They can't do that. They have to, and I say this for both sides. Both sides are guilty of it at different points in their campaigns. They just rely on the, I'm just a better person than the other person. The other person may be a total tool, but if they have good policies to put in place that can help further our country, then that's the way we need to be going. And it blows my mind sometimes. It truly does.
Yeah, I think this illustrates, you know, like you said, it's not about substance for, you know, Kamala's campaign. It's about name calling, and it's about blanket statements. We're going to tell you how to feel about Donald Trump, and we're going to shove it down your throat and say the same phrases over and over again to where, you know, it's borderline propaganda inside your own head that's what you think of when you hear Donald Trump. And I would say the same about Trump, but he's going on Joe Rogan. He's having these podcast conversations, you know, where he's not getting the answers beforehand. He's actually being pressed by interviewers with follow-up questions, and you know, he's actually having to provide substance, where Kamala is, you know, she did one interview where it was, you know, she had follow-up questions, and that was Bret Baier, and we all saw how that went. And
so good. And I don't know if you realize this. I didn't realize it until we were speaking more about it on the Dale Jackson show the day after. I thought Fox was giving him the hard break signal. Anybody that's ever done anything in television or radio or watched anything about television or radio knows there's a signal that your producer gives you when you're running up against the clock, when you're running up against a break, or when something's just gone on too long and you need to switch gears. I thought when he referenced to they're telling me to break, when he said that, or they're telling me to wrap. That's what it was. They're telling me to wrap.
They're telling me I got to wrap it up. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was speaking about his producer saying, hey, we only, you know, they agreed to X amount of time. We've hit that time. We've got to wrap it up to keep our commitment. Come to find out, it was her team telling him, wrap it up. And it started with one person telling him to wrap it up. And then as it continued to unravel, as you watch it at the end, as it unravels, it gets worse and worse for her in the span of 30 seconds. There were three people at that point telling him to wrap.
Mm-hmm.
So it's they don't trust her to get out there and communicate their policy effectively. And that's a problem. And that's what you get when you pull your guy out and put in someone who is even less qualified.
Yeah.
Who has an even worse record.
And not only did they tell him to rap, but they, in his own words, iced him to where they showed up about 15 to 20 minutes late. And they were taping this in only an hour before it was going to air. So there's not really much wiggle room, you know, because they got to edit stuff. They got to get it ready to go on TV. You know, if you're going to show up late and ice them, then that's, you know,
it's all part of the strategy.
It's all psychological. And on top of that, cutting it early and wrapping it up while she's mid answering a question, like makes me believe they have very little trust in her to do anything well media related. And that's why, you know, just from my point of view, if you're Kamala, Joe Rogan is such a perfect opportunity to turn things around. Go out and have a good sit down with him. Show that you can actually provide something of substance, string some sentences together, and, you know, sound presidential. And, you know, they talk about Joe Biden not sounding presidential because he's barely even able to function as a human being. But she doesn't even make sense to what she's saying. And it's awful. It's not the same sort of, you know, incompetence in terms of speaking as Joe Biden, but it's close to the level of incompetence in terms of she's not really saying much at all. She's kind of just saying words to say words. And
well, when she's pressed, when she's flustered, is when the word salad happens. And to be at that level of leadership, you have to have some control over that. It happens to all of us. Now, we're silly and we're not truthful with ourselves if we say we've not been in a situation where we didn't know the answer to a question and we had to stall, or we flubbed in responding because we were responding on the fly or off the cuff and on something that we weren't super well versed in. We've all had moments where we've needed a second to put our thoughts together. However, in that role, at that level, the things that she's being asked about, she should be well versed enough to be able to give an answer without leaning on, you and I both know, she does that a lot, you and I both know, you know, her crutch phrases of, I grew up in a middle class family, I'm going to fix the economy, Trump is Hitler, like all these things that she just leans on and repeats. I think you mentioned earlier about feeling a momentum shift. I think that momentum shift is happening for two reasons. One, I think the media is tired of having to do all the hard work for that campaign. But I also think the undecided voters, the independents, they're a little tired of they're tired of asking, can you please just tell me what your plan is? Can you please just tell me what your policy is? Because Trump is tried and true. We've seen what happened there. We've seen what happens in President Trump's America and under his leadership. We know what's happened in Biden's America with Kamala as a part of that administration. So every opportunity she gets to change the narrative there, she squanders by tearing down Trump. And everyone is tired of it on both sides.
Yeah.
You just want some civility back where we focus on policy. I'm a big believer in policy over personality when it comes to politics, but sometimes I feel like I'm the only person, JP.
Yeah. And, you know, it's when we critique her, you know, obviously the quote policies that she claims to be in support of, which she's flip-flopped on almost every single major issue that she claims to be, you know, in support of, you know, whether it's fracking.
There's no
question I'm in favor of fracking, and now she's danced around the topic and, you know, backtracked on it, and now she's apparently pro marijuana when she put in over 1900 people in jail when she was DA for marijuana charges. But now She wants every person to have marijuana, but not only every person, she just wants black men to have weed. That's what she wants, because first of all, how insulting that she's going to put out a memo that, you know, says that black men in America are suffering too much under, you know, crackdowns for marijuana charges. You know, I want to make marijuana free for black men like that. She has no idea how to fix the problem of, you know, black men, you know, not voting for Harris in this upcoming election, and the numbers for the Democratic Party amongst that demographic is going down. You know, all that to say, she doesn't have any topic that she, you know, any policy that she has stayed firm on, you know, throughout her tenure as a politician. She's flip-flopped on every issue and there's nothing of substance. And then on top of that, like you said, the media has been having to cover for her, and you can't run off a fake candidate for so long, because we're not just bashing her for her bad policies, quote policies, but we're bashing her off the fact that she's not even providing substance of what her policies are. She's not providing anything to, you know, for, she's not providing a substance for anybody to vote for her off of. They're just simply voting for her because she's not Trump or, you know, first woman president, whatever it is. But I there's no policy issue that she's provided, you know, of substance that gives anybody any confidence, you know, to truly vote for her because you think she's a good candidate. It's all, you know, because she's not Trump.
Yeah, as a woman, I'd really like to see the whole talking point of you've got to vote for her because she would be the first woman president go away. You shouldn't vote for anyone just because they would be the first to do something, the first of their kind, of their gender, of their race, of their nationality to be something. You should vote for someone because they are the most capable person for the job, man or woman, black or white. That's, I mean, why does it have to be any more complicated than that? It doesn't.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to break down some more of this on the other side. And Kamala continuing to call Trump Hitler, which I find amazing that they have gone back into that. I think that shows how desperate they really are. Right Side Radio, make sure to stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back here on Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Phil Williams is out today doing some important speaking engagement. But you have JP and Emily Hayes here helping pick up the slack and fill in for him today. We were talking last segment, you know, Kamala not going on Joe Rogan, avoiding a lot of the media lately when momentum has been shifting towards Trump. And, you know, maybe that's a sign of panic and, you know, desperation on their part that they're worried about their internal polling. And, you know, she goes on Bret Baier and her staff, you know, forces Bret to wrap things up and, you know, they don't trust her with the media. The desperation and panic that I'm sensing from the left right now is very high. And to the fact that I've almost seen Obama out and about campaigning on the campaign trail more than I've seen Kamala Harris do anything. And, you know, Obama is sort of the, you know, Phil made a great reference of, you know, break glass in trouble, you know, bring out the Obama. You know, if we're going down in the polls and, you know, things aren't looking so good, just put Obama out on the trail. Everybody loves Obama and that'll shift things towards the other way. But, you know, like I said, that just illustrates sort of the desperation. On top of that, they are back on the Hitler thing, calling Trump Hitler and trying to scare the American people of Trump. You know, they're not going to debate him on policy. They're not going to actually, you know, say anything of substance as to why they should be voting for Kamala over Trump. No, they're just going to compare Trump to Hitler and call him Hitler and continue to, you know, say these outrageous things to try to scare the American public of Donald Trump. And I want to play this clip real quick because it's really funny. It shows a clip of Obama saying, golly, I don't know why we're so toxic and so divided and so bitter in this nation. And then it goes into exactly why with Kamala calling Trump Hitler. So here it is.
I don't understand how we got so toxic and just so divided and so bitter. And
he said he wanted generals like Adolf Hitler had. Donald Trump said that because he does not want a military that is loyal to the United States Constitution. He wants a military that is loyal to him. He wants a military who will be loyal to him personally. One that will obey his orders even when he tells them to break the law or abandon their oath to the Constitution of the United States. In just the past week, Donald Trump has repeatedly called his fellow Americans the enemy from within, and even said that he would use the United States military to go after American citizens.
Golly gee, why are we so divided in this nation? Why are people taking shots on Donald Trump? Why have there been two assassination attempts on him? I don't know. Maybe because you're calling the guy Hitler, and maybe because you're saying things that aren't true. You know they're not true, but yet you keep saying the same narrative over and over again because you're losing and you're desperate, and the only way you know to get out of it is to call him Adolf Hitler. And, you know, yeah, Trump's such a bad guy, and he's so much like Hitler that he forgot to act like Hitler the first time around in his presidency. You know, he forgot to use the military against his enemies when he was president the first time. He forgot to do all that bad stuff. Maybe it's because he's not actually Hitler. Is that such an insane concept to say? Like, it's so insane to me that they keep doing this and that they're stooping so low that they're going to call Trump Hitler out of desperation. I mean, I would say I'm surprised and I'm shocked, but I'm not. You know, this is usual from them.
You shouldn't be surprised because they've done this for years and years and years and years. It's the fallback play. You know, they've done it. We went through this morning of how far it goes back. I mean, all the way back to Barry Goldwater.
Yeah, the first one not to go to that dinner.
Do what?
Oh, I was referencing, I believe it was, I thought you were going to reference, you know, Barry Goldwater. He was the first one, and I go to the Al Smith dinner, and Kamala was the second to do that. But
I mean, they just, everyone that they've called Hitler-esque or, you know, in favor of Nazis, it's Dick Cheney. And now they're all cuddled up to Liz, but they accuse her dad of being like Hitler. They did Mitt Romney. They did Ronald Reagan. They did George Bush. Like, it's the fallback card. It's the, you talked about things reeking of desperation. That's what it is. You're getting down. You're in the last, less than 2 weeks to the election. You're throwing everything out there, hoping that something sticks, hoping that you throw something forcefully enough that it pushes an undecided voter into your camp.
But
you could be alienating people at the same time.
They keep saying the line of Trump said he's going to use the military against his own people. That's just not what he said. And, like, it's just the usual twisting what he said. And, you know, we got hammered by Kareem, who called it in during that show, saying, "Yo, why can't you just take Trump at his word? It's because that's not what he said." Y'all are taking Trump at the media's word, not at Trump's word. And, you know, the part where he did reference using the National Guard, he was referencing, you know, the left, the quote, the enemy within, the people that destroy America's own cities because, you know, stuff happens that they don't like. That is what he was referencing. He wasn't referencing, day one in office, I'm going to send the military after every single Democrat within this nation because they are the enemy within. You know, why didn't he do that the first time around? Maybe it's because he's not going to do it. Have you thought about that? You know, how, like, you can think back to, man, this guy was president. Did he do all this, you know, bad stuff that the left is saying that he's going to do this time around? You know, you have a frame of reference here from his first term that he did not do any of those things. So who is right here? Is it the side that is calling this guy Hitler, who killed 6 million Jews and one of the worst human beings to ever exist? Or is it the guy that was already president and did not do any of those things? I don't know. It's just something to think about. But we're going to talk more about this and the current state of the race right now, 12 days away. Man, it's coming up on us like crazy. But make sure you keep it locked right here on Right Side Radio. There's Emily and JP helping fill in for Phil Williams today. We'll be right back. Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, here live from the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, and the national, all the issues. And like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right, man. This show goes all the way south of Birmingham, spanning north to Huntsville, from Tuscaloosa back to Gaston, with parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. And, you know, I did a spotless introduction again, but this is not Phil Williams. I hate to break it to you, filling in for the show today. This is JP alongside with Emily Hayes. You can find her every weekday morning on the Dale Jackson Show from 5 to 9 a.m. up on WVNN. I want to answer some texts real quick because we got a decent amount of texts in. Let's see. TL from Huntsville says, "Hey, JP and Emily, good show. As to your conversation earlier, I wouldn't mind a woman president, but can it at least not be a DEI, glass-breaking Marxist communist destined for failure and indoctrinated by Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals? We need someone with a modicum of common sense and loyalty to country, or excuse me, to God and country." I would agree with you there. And not to vote for a woman simply because she's a woman, but vote for somebody of substance. And if she's also a woman, then great. But, you know, I feel like they trotted out Kamala to run off of just, you know, I'm a woman president, vote for me. Let's see. If we got Victor from Huntsville. He said, "Obama doesn't understand. He's ground zero of the divisive rhetoric in America, and he completely understands that, ... So, yeah, I would agree. And, you know, if you remember during Obama's presidency, that is kind of when the DEI stuff came into full effect and started the identity politics, but also everybody, you know, seeing each other based off skin color and not, you know, your character, who you are as a person. So I would agree with that. I think Obama was, you know, he helped start the divisive rhetoric, and, you know, he's part of the party that's calling Trump Hitler right now. So we got Gary from Decatur saying, "You give Obama too much credit. Even Romney, a terrible candidate, had him on the ropes in their debate on the Russia issue, and he let him off. He barely beat Romney in the election as a rhino." Yeah, but I agree. I mean, I think Obama is terrible, but he's very likable amongst the independent voter, and obviously amongst his own party, he's very likable. But I think they kind of see him as, you know, if things start to go bad, just trot out Obama out there. They don't really know what else to do.
Right, that's part of the we're 10 days away, let's throw everything at this. And that includes bringing out past successes.
Yeah. This has worked before. Let's see if it works again. Even though Obama's got, you know, white hair and seems like he seems like
he really doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, but they still trot him out, and it's something. We got Rex from Huntsville said, Harris being the DEI pick for VP demonstrates why it's bad practice. The VP should be qualified to be president with no hesitancy. The Dems didn't think that far out. I would agree with that. Julie from Indiana, or from rough Marshall County. Kamala answers those tough questions the same way I used to answer, quote, discussion questions on a test I wasn't prepared for. Yeah. It's like when you have an essay to 1,000 words and you got to somehow get to 1,000 words when you really don't know what you're talking about. That's pretty much what she does.
So you have to define everything.
Yes. And be, like, Webster Dictionary defines this as this.
Right. But Julie's saying that about discussion questions. Like, I kept it really vague. That way, you know, when a teacher's grading it, maybe they understand, maybe not. And maybe they'll just give me, I don't know, a B for effort.
Yeah. We got Jim Grove from Oak, Jim from Grove Oak, Alabama, not Jim Grove. He said, last night's town hall on CNN was a disaster for Harris. Even David Axelrod said it was a word salad city. Yep. I've not seen that, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, we checked that out, and it was oof.
Even the town hall is, what was it, the Telemundo thing where she had a teleprompter for herself? Like, that's not a town hall.
Yeah, I didn't see the Telemundo thing.
Yeah, apparently she did a town hall, and there was a teleprompter facing her, and when they saw the camera was panning behind her to where they could see the teleprompter, they shut it off quickly. And
listen, she's had so many slip-ups, so many gaffes, like so many times. It's just she's not helped her cause. She's not helped her cause. When she can't be handled and presented in the way that they would like her to be handled and presented, She drops the ball. I mean, there was the hurricane, what was that, like the hurricane response or whatever, where they were all like 9 people, looked like a Zoom meeting. They're all discussing the response and what's going on and updating and stuff like that. And she puts her hand in front of her mouth and asks her staff if this is live. And it's like, you know what, you always have to assume things are live.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, especially when it's part of your business to address the public at any point in time. If there's a camera in front of you, if there's a microphone, if there's a camera on you, if there's a microphone in front of you, you have to treat it like a hot mic and a live camera all the time.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Allie from Athens said, I know that you have heard me say this many times in a text form as well as live, but being in Iraq and having people be willing to die in order to have the chance to vote changed me forever. They actually brought their coffins and gave instructions to their families that if they got blown up by al-Zarqawi for getting their index finger dyed purple as proof for having voted, it would have all been worth it. We vote because it's the right thing to do. End of story. I agree with that 100%. And you know, you sort of come to appreciate the rights you have when you hear how, you know, everything is around the world. You know, not everywhere has the liberties as America, and we need to exercise those rights to vote every chance we can get.
I was so excited to vote when I turned 18. Yeah. I was super pumped to be able to vote.
I voted every chance I have been able to since I turned 18.
Same.
And I plan to do that, as long
as
you're
a lot closer to 18 than I am. So. Yeah,
exactly. John Paul from Huntsville also said, JP, you've got to play at least one sound effect. So there you go. There you go, John Paul from Huntsville. I hope that blew your ears out. I'm just kidding. That bomb is so loud in my ears. Like, every time I play it, I almost startle myself, even though I know it's coming. Anyways, let's get back to business here. I actually have a sound clip I forgot to play earlier. It's 18 seconds long. You know, we were talking about the insane rhetoric from the left and played that clip of Kamala calling Trump Hitler. Here's Tim Walz saying that Trump will be a dictator and spewing the same nonsense that his running mate is. So here it is.
Look, Donald Trump made it very clear that this is an election about Donald Trump taking full control of the military to use against his political enemies, taking full control of the Department of Justice to prosecute those who disagree with him, taking full control of the media on what is told and what is told to the American public.
Just insane. Like, does anybody believe him? Do you think he even believes himself when he says it? Like, deep down, he's got to know this is ridiculous, right? Like, nobody believes this.
They are incredible. I just don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't know anymore. And I wonder, like, you know, this is our business, right, JP? This is what we have to, we have to do. We've chosen to work in this profession, especially not just talk radio, but news talk radio. So we have to cover this stuff and we have to present it to everyone. And we hear it all the time. And we see through it. There's the casual listener. There's the person scrolling on the dial that doesn't hear it all the time, that doesn't get the full analysis behind it and things like that. And you have to wonder how they take it, hearing it maybe twice, three times. What is their takeaway from it? Does it encourage them to do research on their own and find out if that's a substantiated statement, if there's any truth behind it? Or do they just take it on its face and take it as fact?
Well, obviously, there's a large group of people, unfortunately. Well, I wouldn't say large. I would say about maybe half to a little bit over half of the Democratic Party falls into this genre. You know, it's probably less than that, but I'm kind of over-exaggerating maybe a little bit. You know, the people that they hear the Trump is Hitler, they hear all that stuff, and it's almost like propaganda in their mind in the terms of they will regurgitate it without them even noticing. You know, if they're talking about Trump, all they've heard from their party, and the only, you know, if they only choose to listen to their party, the only thing they heard is this guy's Hitler, he's going to use the military against his own people, he's a fascist, he's, you know, the good people on both sides lies, you know, whatever it is, they're going to regurgitate that. And if you say a lie enough, then it will eventually, you know, you'll believe it. Even if you necessarily don't believe that you're telling a lie, you say it so much that, you know, it almost just becomes second nature. And then you start to believe it yourself, that this guy is a threat to democracy. He's, you know, he's Hitler, whatever it is. There's groups of people out there that if they hear the same thing like that over and over again from, you know, the people they listen to and the party they support, then they're going to start to believe it on their own. Now, in terms of independents, I think a lot of them, you know, they kind of hear that. And I think a large group of independents think, you know, that's a bit ridiculous. Even if they're not going to support Trump and vote for Trump, they don't think the guy's a threat to democracy and think that he's, you know, Hitler, he's going to use the military against his own people. I think a large group of independents, even if they're not going to vote for Trump, I think they know that's ridiculous and it's political games. But my thing is, if you're going to call somebody Hitler, like, that is so, you trivialize who Hitler really was, right? Because you say the name so much, the name loses all value. And then if you start to think back of, you know, who Hitler was and how awful he was, then, you know, you lose all term, you know, you lose any sort of frame of reference to who he actually was, because they say Trump is Hitler. Trump hasn't killed 6 million Jews. Trump didn't commit genocide. Trump didn't try to take over Europe and wasn't a demagogue. Like, so then they think back to, oh, maybe Hitler wasn't that bad. Maybe if Trump's like Hitler, you know, you sort of trivialize who Hitler really was, and you start to, you know, insult the people who actually had to live through that and actually died at the hands of Hitler and their family that are still here today. So it's so insulting to people, you know, who have family members who died from Hitler, and, you know, you trivialize who Hitler was, and it's, you make a mockery out of it. So, but anyways, we need to take a quick break though, before I start to ramble more and more about how ridiculous, you know, them calling Trump Hitler is. But we're going to get more into that on the other side. And like I said, this show is going to be mainly a state of the race show, where we think either candidate is, what we think of you know, the momentum shift right now, what we make of the pollings that are out, because 12 days away, this thing's going to be happening. So it's not much time left. So we're going to take a quick break. Right back on the other side. You're listening to Right Side Radio with Emily Hayes and JP. We'll be right back. And we are back. Right Side Radio here. Solid conservative and just plain right. This is JP helping fill in for Phil Williams today, alongside with Emily Hayes from the Dale Jackson Show from 5 to 9 a.m. on weekdays up on WVNN. A couple more texts came in from the text line, so let me get those real quick. John Paul from Huntsville said, JP, if Trump wins, are they still going to put him in jail? I don't know. See, whatever happened to the trial for that he was convicted on 34 counts of felonies of? I believe they delayed it till after the election. I think the real question is, if Trump loses, are they still going to put him in jail? That's the real question.
Do you think they would just give up if he loses the election? Do you think they would just be like, oh, well, nothing to see here.
Maybe. If he wins, though, I mean, no, they're
if
not going to.
If he wins, it's full court press. They're going for it.
Maybe, but they can't really put the president in jail. Like, I don't know. I feel like they would drop it at, if he. I almost feel like they're more likely to try to put him in jail if he loses, though, as sort of the nail in the coffin, because they're kind of petty like that. But if he wins, they can't really. I don't really think they can throw the current president in jail. And plus, the presidential immunity ruling from Supreme Court is gonna. You know, I feel like that's gonna delay. You know, them trying to do that as well. I would be more worried about them putting him in jail if he loses, honestly, because I feel like that's just who they are. They're kind of just petty like that. John from Brownsboro, Alabama. So the difference is the people who saw potential in Trump in 16 and 20 are still with him, and the Harris supporters in 2020 where they're not a single vote cast for them. I think what he's trying to say is, you know, Trump has his voter support from when he's run twice already. Meanwhile, Harris doesn't have any of that because they were voting for Biden. And he's got a good point, because it's almost like you're it's insulting to the presidential office right now if you're saying a guy is not even capable to run for another term of office, so then we're going to commit a coup against him, but meanwhile he's still going to be president. It's kind of, well, it's not kind of, it is insulting to the office of the presidency, the fact that Joe Biden is sitting up there and they've openly admitted with the coup they ran against him that he's not able to, he's not fit for the job, but yet he'll be president until January of 2025. It's insulting. And, you know, this whole thing is, he's got a good point, because Kamala is not a real candidate, in my opinion, in the terms of, you know, we talked about earlier, she hasn't provided any sort of substance in terms of policy. She's just kind of a warm body for the Democratic Party. And I think they know majority of the base will simply vote for whoever has a D next to their name. But the problem is, I think they underestimated how much of the independent vote will not vote for her, you know, based off her, you know, not giving a substance. I think they were able to run her from the basement almost like they did Joe Biden. Obviously, it wasn't to the same extent. It wasn't to the same extent of, you know, at least she was doing in-person stuff, but the media was covering for her, and they were able to ride that honeymoon period. I think they thought they were able to, you know, they would be able to ride the honeymoon period until the very end, and it crashed and burned.
I think they're tired of it. Not tired of it in the sense of, we're tired of this, we're not doing this anymore, there's nothing in it for us, you know, kind of thing, but tired in the, man, we could really use a nap because having to push this is exhausting.
Yeah, and you're asking them to do an impossible feat. You know, you're even CNN is kind of acknowledging now. I just look, and CNN is talking about Harris's unfavorability ratings have skyrocketed since August. So I think they're even sensing the momentum shift from Harris to Trump. I mean, the polls, you can't deny it. You know, you can't deny the shift that has happened. And, you know, it's funny you say that, because, you know, we saw in the debate with David Muir, like, only correcting or, quote, fact-checking, even though it wasn't real fact checks, you know, only to Donald Trump. And then there was the whistleblower that said that Harris had the questions ahead of time, and that, you know, they said they were only going to fact check Trump. I don't know how true that is. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, but they were going all in to do whatever they could to prop up Harris. And I think that shows how bad of a candidate Harris really is, because even with all the help of the mainstream media, the people still sensed and saw she is not a real candidate. There's no substance behind her, and her momentum crashed and burned. The honeymoon period came to a screeching halt. And now we see Donald Trump, according to the polls, is up in every single battleground state. It's nuts. But I think, like you said, the mainstream media is tired. But I think the fact that she's still failing with the mainstream media's help, I think that shows how bad of a candidate she really is.
She just, man, I wonder, I don't know. I wonder what it would they have been able to turn the tide with Joe, do you think? Do you ever think about that? Do you ever think about
it? I do. I have thought about
if
that.
If they had kept Joe and they got to the second debate, could they weather the storm enough to have turned it around?
I don't know. I think it was just that bad. And what's funny is they didn't anticipate, or I guess they didn't.
They didn't anticipate her being so awful.
Well, yeah, that too. But I think it's funny how they didn't expect such a bad debate performance. It was almost like they were caught off guard. It's like, guys, did you know Joe Biden like can't even function? And it's almost like Republicans
caught
have been
off guard, just like Joe.
Yes, exactly. It's almost like Republicans have been saying that his entire term, and it's like this big surprise to them. It's like, guys, did you know the president is like not functioning? We got to get him out of this. You know, oh no, we're not gonna get him out of office, obviously, but we got to get another candidate to win. That's all they're focused on. They're not focused on competency in office. They're focused on winning. One more text before we go to break. John from Harvest says, JP and Emily, don't dismiss the possibility that a significant number of people don't see through the obvious propaganda coming from this administration, especially if their whole exposure to the news is NPR. In some of my non-work Harveys, I have a significant number of left-center friends. Oh, and his text cut off. But I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back on the other side. This is Right Side Radio with JP and Emily. We'll be right back. Back here on Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Phil Williams is out today doing a speaking engagement, but we got JP alongside with Emily Hayes here to fill in and give you a great show. So I hope you've been enjoying the show so far, and we're gonna take you to go home time here on a I guess you could call it a Taco Thursday, but it's really, you know, I think we have a button effect for a Turbo Thursday on there, so I guess you could call it a Turbo Thursday. But I feel like any day can be a taco that day.
What's Turbo Thursday mean?
I don't know. It's some, well, we can press the button and find out. Let's do it.
Okay. Let's do it.
Could mean that that point in time inherently contains some sort of cosmic significance. Almost as if it were the temporal junction point of the entire space-time continuum.
Oh, so like Turbo Into the Weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because I hear Turbo... When you said Turbo Thursday, and you may not know this song, but there's a song by Judas Priest called Turbo Lover, and that's all I could hear in my head.
I've not heard that, no.
Oh, man. In the next break, you've got to listen to it. It's the video's insane, too. Insane.
Also, by the way, since I am running the show as well as doing the show for those who are calling in while we are on the air, I unfortunately cannot take that call. But if I'm going to call during the break, then I'm more than likely to take a call and put you on. But for those who are calling while we are on the air, unfortunately, I'm having to do both. So
he's a one-man show, kind of.
A little peek behind the curtain there of I'm unable to do that. But we got we got some more texts in, so let me read those real quick. JP, I think, this is John Paul from Huntsville. JP, I think Harris may lose some votes because a certain amount of Democrats are going to write in Joe Biden's name. I don't know about that. I think a majority of the people who are voting on the Democratic side are kind of done with Joe Biden. We got David from Hoax Bluff, who also said they set Joe up from the beginning. Yeah, I would not agree.
The way things have unfolded, it certainly looks like that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't think that even falls in the conspiracy theory category.
Well, there's reports of the clash between both, the Harris campaign and Biden's administration. There's some, you know, stuff of Biden holding press briefings while Harris is doing little campaign events and, you know, almost like they're purposely stepping on each other. And then you see, you know, Joe Biden saying that Governor DeSantis did a great job with the hurricane prep, and he did such a good job. He gave him his own personal number only like hours after Kamala said that Ron DeSantis is playing political games. He won't take my call. And it's almost like, are they doing this stuff on purpose? You know, is Joe Biden bitter and petty with how he was ousted? I would be. And I think
maybe when he has a moment of clarity,
maybe if he realizes he's not running again, you know,
hey, something's different here and I'm mad about it.
But I wonder if the divisiveness within the Democratic Party, and maybe not in sense of the voters, but in terms of, you know, because I don't know how many of the people who are running Harris's campaign are also part of Biden's administration. You know, do we sort of have a split administration up in D.C. of people who are like Team Joe Biden, you could say, and then Team Harris, and they're kind of stepping at each other? I don't know if that's the case at all, but I do think that sort of divisiveness and a lack of unity behind Kamala Harris between the current sitting president and the current vice president, by the way, may I add in there, that may end up being her downfall. And it's funny, I add in the current sitting president and vice president because we're having that campaign pettiness behind the scenes, political pettiness behind the scenes, while these two people are supposed to be running the country. And it's, I don't know, that's just kind of funny to me that they're, you know, that divisiveness is going on when they're the two people who are supposed to be running our country right now. And
right.
It's embarrassing.
I think if you think about the independent voter, if they look at it from the aspect, independent or undecided voter that looks at it from the aspect of, which party seems more unified behind their candidate, that you'd have to go with the Republican, then you'd have to lean on the right.
Oh, yeah.
For that. Because it's just, I don't know, man. It's like hiring someone to clean your home when their home is a wreck and trashed and filthy. You know, what confidence do you have that they're going to take care of your home when everything in their home is a mess? Does that make sense?
No, it does. And, you know, it's... the Democratic Party likes to be the party of unity. We're going to trot out Bill Clinton and Joe Biden and Barack Obama and Michelle Obama and all these, you know, the top Democrat people. But yeah, I think behind the scenes, there's a bit of a divisiveness.
Yeah, but playing the greatest hits doesn't mean that your next album is exactly gonna be great.
That's why I think the Obama card, it's the only card they know how to play in times like this. But yet, it's not, I don't think it's going to work. And I think there's a divisiveness behind the scenes in the Democratic Party, not just between Harris and Joe Biden, but, you know, the Biden family and the Obama family apparently don't get along well. You know, I think they like to put on a front that they're the party of unity. And I'm not saying the Republican Party is perfect by any means. I mean, Trump has burnt many bridges with certain people within the, you know, within the party. But we see those get amended, and we see, you know, people like Nikki Haley campaigning with Trump. We see DeSantis, you know, that ultimately it's still more unified than the Democratic Party right now, which I think is turning on each other and will ultimately be their downfall in November, I believe. We got a text in from Tracy from Athens, by the way, that said, "Emily, I love you for knowing that song."
I karaoke'd it one time with my good friend Wes. He was big into that era of metal and super good dude. He was a good friend of mine that passed away some years ago. But whenever I think of my metal experience or metal education, I had to give a nod to my friend Wes Marshall on that one.
We also got a text in that said, "I was just," from John Paul from Huntsville, said, "I was just wondering if Emily is an official member of the fashion police." You know what's funny?
This thing won't let...
This morning. You know, every now and then if I get up and, like, I'm up and going, like, early enough to... You know, because, you know, listen, I'm a 21-year-old guy. A lot of times I like to kind of just roll out of bed and within, like, 10 minutes walk out the door for work. But the days where I am up a bit earlier and... have some free time, I will listen to the show every now and then. This morning,
the show that you used to be a part of and do so well with.
Yes, I do. Yes, every now and then. And I listened this morning to Dale asking Mo Brooks about your fashion takes on DeBoer, and his answer was perfect. Of I don't care what he wears as long as he beats Vanderbilt in Tennessee.
He said he could be in his underwear as long as he beats Vanderbilt in Tennessee. And JP, I will tell you this. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could remember which day it was, but there was the first time that I brought it up in Hated Eight about not being very enthused or motivated.
It was game
or
one.
Encouraged, huh?
It was after game one you were saying that.
Well, yeah, I mean, because it looked kind of, it just, I don't want you going out there dressing like your players. I want to look on the sidelines and know who the coach is. I don't want to wonder if this is somebody that's just hanging back there, like waiting to be tagged in or something. But the whole thing is, it went on for like a week or so, right? Like 2 weeks of I was frustrated with this black thin sweatshirt thing that he was wearing, and I got enough hate. I mean, people on our text line were brutal, super, super brutal about it. And so finally I went on the air after Dale kept saying something about it, and I said the date and the time, and this is the last time I'm going to bring up how he's dressed. And I've kept my word. I've not brought it up, but Dale just beats that dead horse.
Listen, Dale
brings it up, and he's asking every flipping flapping politician that comes on the show. He asked Senator Tuberville this morning that was on before Mo.
Oh,
like,
geez.
He's asking everybody. He's like, "Oh, Emily, by the way, Emily wants to know. Emily has a question for you. Emily, this." So to these people that I don't have as much of a relationship with as Dale does, right? Because I'm newer to the show. I've only been on since February. All these jokers think, who is this vapid moron that's just worried about what the coach is wearing? It doesn't matter as long as they win. And I don't have enough time in the day to explain my position to them because they're very busy people. But Dale is just making me look like flipping flapping Joan Rivers of WVNN.
Well, Dale will run a bit into the ground. He still does the bit of me being a 9/11 truther for some reason. He did it on this show during one of the grand councils. Said something about how, you know, JP doesn't believe jet fuel can melt steel. It's like, where did that even go? He doesn't even know where that came from anymore. He just spouts out bits and doesn't even know where they started. But I will say this on my take on DeBoer and his choice of fashion. I was on the side of, I don't care what he wears. He's a great coach. Alabama's winning. We're fine. But the moment where Vanderbilt was taking a knee, to run out the clock, and they showed him on the sideline with the nipples poking through the t-shirt and the bad hat, and I sat there and I was like, you know, that really pisses me off that he is wearing that. And, you know, it's funny. Winning takes care of a lot of things. If you're going to look like a slob, you better well be winning, because when you lose and look like a slob, especially at Vanderbilt when you're number one Alabama, it's a bad look.
It's a bad look all around.
Yeah, it's not good. John from Harvest texted in and said, karaoke, well, now Emily needs to sing some of that song now on the air. I'm going to save her from that.
There's two things missing here, and that's Maker's Mark and a Pall Mall Blue 100, and I quit smoking 6 years ago, so that's never going to happen again. But do love me some metal karaoke.
Well, I've never even heard that song, so maybe I have to do some research.
You've got to listen to it. Do you know Ace of Spades by Motorhead?
Nope.
Let me tell you, that was my other karaoke jam, too. You got to educate JP on some jams.
Well, there's a lot of songs on the bumpers here that I've never even heard of. So,
when we did an audio, just to pull the curtain back a little bit, when we did an audio check earlier, JP's like, can you hear anything? And I was like, yeah, I can hear Boston. And he was like, all right, cool. And he's like, are you getting the station? I said, yeah, I can hear Aerosmith.
And I can hear Van Halen.
I can hear Van Halen. So.
Well, I'm actually curious what this bumper will be before the break right here. I can't even tell what this song is. Nope, no idea. But we are going to go into a break because we're running a little bit long. But we're going to get into some more of this state of the race on the other side here and talk about Kamala and her loss of momentum, which she's coming to a screeching halt. JP and Emily helping fill in on Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back here on Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. This is JP alongside with Emily Hayes helping fill in for Phil Williams today, who was off doing a speaking engagement. But he will be back tomorrow, so no worries there. But we got a caller on the line. Brian from Huntsville is on the line. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Doing pretty well, and it's good to hear y'all today.
Thank you, sir.
I wanted to mention something. Even if they do throw a sentence at Trump for imprisonment or not, you still got the problem if he's won, J.D. Vance is going to end up being the president-elect, and he can go ahead after he assumes office. He can recommend to the House and the Senate as to be approved by a majority his own choice as vice president.
Yeah, that's a great point. Do you want to throw Trump in jail? I mean, you have J.D. Vance, who they called weird and just as bad as, you know, Trump. And yeah, that's a great point. It's not like they got a cakewalk if they throw Trump in jail. You got JD who agrees with him politically and would enforce all the same stuff Trump will.
And if they do, with a new person in charge of the Department of Justice there and everything, they kick the current fellow out and put his own in, and then they've made open season.
Hey, Brian,
typing anybody now.
Brian, yes. Forgive my ignorance on this, but say that happens and J.D. Vance becomes president-elect or whatever if they put Trump in jail. Can J.D. then do a pardon for Trump?
No, because it's on New York State federal charges.
Okay.
So he cannot directly pardon Trump. That would have to be something from the governor of New York.
Huh.
From everything that I've read and everything that I've heard.
Yeah, like I said, pardon my ignorance on it. It was just a thought that came to mind, that would there be any kind of silver lining there for Trump if that were to happen?
Oh, I don't know if he can get out of things and everything. Maybe J.D. Vance can appoint Trump as vice president. Then Trump can start to run again in 4 years for president.
That would be something. Well, Brian, thanks for your call on that different perspective. Appreciate it. Well, we want to turn things back to some local stuff that's going on within the state of Alabama. There's a story from Way 31, and Emily, you're the one that actually pointed this story out to me, so you helped me out with what's going on with this story. But the headline says, independent pharmacies face potential closure without stricter PBM regulation. What's all going on
so
there?
The thing is, you know, with anything that you're not in all the time, and you try to to have a good understanding of stuff, you got to do a little education on it. And that's what I had to do with this stuff about pharmacy benefit managers. Now, it's no secret to anybody that listens to the Dale Jackson Show that I also do some work for Star Pharmacy and Star Supermarket here in Huntsville. And they've really kind of helped bring to the forefront pharmacy benefit manager reform. Lawmakers recently introduced House Bill 9096. It's also known as the Pharmacist Fight Back Act. Way 31 has picked this up and has started reporting on it to help give a little more insight into what exactly is going on with PBM reform. We all know, you know, if you look over the last, we'll just take 10 years, that prescription drug prices have gone up. And PBMs originally were put in place to help make sure that those things didn't happen, but they tend to be benefiting from it more than reducing costs for folks. PBMs act as intermediaries between insurance companies and pharmacies. They often steer patients toward mail order services for more profitable prescriptions. Think about your Ozempics and your Mounjaro. Both of those are used for diabetes and weight loss. Which one is chosen often depends on which drug the insurance covers. So PBMs often receive kickbacks amounting to nearly 50% of the drug's cost to ensure the drug's preference. You know, you can kind of get in deep in the weeds on this with some language that we're not all super familiar with. But at the end of the day, one thing to know is that PBR reform doesn't hurt the average consumer. It just is something that needs to happen. The bill's key objectives, this House Bill 9096, is to set fair payment rules for pharmacies, increasing drug pricing transparency under government programs like Medicare and Medicaid, and to ensure consistent pharmacy reimbursements across federal health plans. The bill currently has 34 co-sponsors. And one thing to consider when you start diving into this PBR reform stuff is how lack of regulation of the PBMs can put lives at risk. Because at the end of the day, PBMs are beholden to stockholders. So you think about someone that can't get their asthma inhaler because they go to get what's normally been a prescription that they could afford, but then unregulated PBMs can adjust that pricing or have one drug be a little more favorable than the other to prescribe, and then, you know, you're without life-saving medication. You look at how much insulin's increased in the last 10 years. It's life-saving medication. So there has to be some kind of transparency there, regulation there, to ensure some fairness across the board. And when the local pharmacies aren't getting reimbursed for those things is when you start to see local pharmacies close. And in more rural parts of the state, you've got to have those local pharmacies.
Yeah, and important stuff going on, you know, within the local scene there. All that stuff's kind of outside of my wheelhouse there, but
mine too, man. But I had to get educated.
It's
on
important
it.
Stuff.
My husband's type 1 diabetic, so yeah. I had to get in the know.
It's important stuff for sure. Well, we got about a minute left, and I wanted to preview this. I want to talk about this more on the other side too. There's a very important race here in the state of Alabama that is on the ballot for District 2. It's a race for the House seat between Shamari Figures and Caroline Dobson. The only poll I can find right now is on the Hill. It's based on three polls, and now I have no idea how reliable this is, but it currently says that Shamari Figures has an 11.3% lead in that area. So if you're within District 2, you need to get out and vote, because, you know, these House seats, you know, they go a long way, you know, in terms of the long run, you know, to gain back control of the House. It's very important. And this is a way for you to contribute to that, you know, on the local scene. If you're in District 2, you know, that was an area that was a district that was gerrymandered to get, you know, a Democrat in there. So if you're within District 2, get out and vote for Caroline Dobson, because, like I said, those House seats, they go a long way in the grand scheme of things. You know, to regain control of the House, it goes a long way in terms of, you know, getting stuff passed and, you know, Republicans to get their policies passed that they need to get passed. So if you're within that district, like I said, get out and vote and make your voice heard. Well, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about that stuff on the other side, alongside with the current state of the race. 12 days until the election. It's kind of crazy to think about, but you're listening to Right Side Radio. This is Emily and JP helping fill in for Phil Williams. We'll be right back after this break. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, live from the Right Side studio. Here we got the local, we got the state, and we got the national, covering all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Man, this show goes from all the way south of Birmingham to north of Huntsville, from Tuscaloosa back to Gaston, with parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. This is not Phil Williams doing the show today. This is JP helping fill in alongside with Emily Hayes. You can catch her on the Dale Jackson Show every weekday morning from 5 to 9 a.m. on WVNN up in Huntsville. And let's get some text messages in, because we got some texts that we didn't get to last segment. Jim from Grove Oak, Alabama says, you guys do a good job. Looking forward to Trump in 24 and then Vance in 28 and 32 if this old world is still around. Yeah, I would say I'm very excited about the well, first of all, I'm very excited about Trump reclaiming the White House, first of all, in 12 days. But I'm also very excited about the up-and-comers in this Republican Party. You got J.D. Vance, you got Vivek Ramaswamy, and then you also got the guys like, you know, Ron DeSantis. There's a lot of potential for after Trump, but we need to get Trump elected first this November. But just peeking forward in the future, you know, I'm a big Vivek guy. I really like Vivek Ramaswamy. But it'll be nice to get some new young blood in there after Trump wins the White House this November. And I think the future of the Republican Party looks bright in that sense. Brian from Huntsville, or excuse me, we have a new texter, Georgia from Summerton, Alabama, said, hopefully this is the right side. This is Georgia from Summerton, and said, just wanted to say it's nice that radio station still has common sense. We'll appreciate you, Georgia, for tuning in. Gary from Decatur said, Harris would definitely be a president with an asterisk by her name, having not won more than 1% of the vote in a presidential primary and winning the election, question mark, question mark. Yeah, I think so for sure. And even if she doesn't win, which as of right now, the polls are showing she's not going to, I think history will still remember this as a very interesting and pretty weird and just very
unprecedented
is the right word, you know, thing to happen within a primary. Of they oust the current sitting president after he had won the primary for the vice president, who had not won a single vote in the primary. And not only that, she ran in 2020 and did awful, didn't even get close to, you know, winning the primary. I believe she dropped out before that primary votes even happened
the first time.
Yeah,
you know.
And it's
that the party didn't want her the first time, and now something magically has changed.
Yeah, it's the fact that Biden was losing to Trump and they got desperate is what happened.
Magic.
John from Harvest said karaoke. Well, now, oh, I read that earlier. I meant to read Jeff from Indiana's text.
Speaking
about
of karaoke, as promised, I made JP listen to Turbo Lover by Judas Priest in the break, and I'm pretty sure that JP is ready to go put on a leather jacket and
it's a
go
good,
to a dive bar and do metal karaoke.
It's a good karaoke song. It sounds like something that belongs in Top Gun, that soundtrack.
It's a jam.
It's pretty catchy.
It's a jam. You'll need to have Metal Mondays.
Metal Mondays.
On Right Side. Yeah, have Metal Mondays. You've got, what, Taco Tuesday. You've got the, you play the Hump Day thing on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you've got Turbo Thursday, which is how we got to Turbo Lover. So have Metal Monday.
We don't, you know, that's a good point. And get some Turbo Lover to go along with it, you know. I'm your Turbo. How does that go?
You just pump your fist in the air, man. It's so good. It's so good. Well, I'll send you a list of songs.
Jeff from Indiana actually said, Emily, this weekend I'm going to a party with karaoke, and I will be doing Breaking the Law about Judas Priest.
Breaking the Law.
I know that one.
Yeah. It's so good.
John from Huntsville said, JP, did you hear Dale Jackson this morning ask Emily the question, what is your biggest flaw? So, JP, what is your biggest flaw?
JP, let me tell you the correct answer to this that took me apparently the whole show this morning to learn.
What is
you
it?
You just answer, you just go into, you know, Dale always says, what would Dale Jackson do? You just have to go into Trump mode. And what would Donald Trump say? And Donald Trump would say, flaws, I have no flaws.
Well, he actually said that at the Al Smith dinner. He was like, I'm supposed to say some you know, jokes at myself and my shortcomings. He's like, I don't got any. It's like that. But if you say that, you know, somebody could take that as, oh, this guy's confident, this guy's good. Or you could say, man, that jerk's freaking arrogant. I mean, he has no shortcomings, no flaws. What did you say you didn't give an answer at all?
Man, I did, and I danced around it. I'm going to be very honest. I was Kamala-esque in my answering of it because I tried to buy myself some time to think of something. And then Dale tried to buy me some time to think of something. And then when I still didn't have something, Dale very graciously pointed out that he was buying me some time to think of something. And I still didn't have a good answer. So it was just an all-around fail on my part. You know, speaking of failures, you've missed a lot up here, JP.
Have I?
Since you've just abandoned us. You never come to visit.
It's been like a month.
it's been a long month, buddy. But Monday we had a chili cook-off, and there was a whole debacle on if my chili was actually a chili or if it was a soup. I lost. WVNN... There were only five competing chilies, and WVNN took fourth place and fifth place. Dale and I failed.
Man.
We lost to ZYP.
That's embarrassing. That's like how bad the VNN golf team did at the golf
at the where, Star Charity Golf Classic.
Listen, we shot a 72 altogether, but Dale and Yaffe, it was Dale, Yaffe, myself, and my father, and Dale and Yaffe dipped after like the 10th hole. I believe on the first nine, we shot two over, and then the back nine, we shot four under. So that got us all the way to 72, and we got last place. So
we obviously have to work on our team building activities, so when we go out in public to do things, we perform a bit better.
Yeah.
I'm slightly concerned because tomorrow I'm doing the Shoot for Shelter event for the Downtown Rescue Mission, and I've never shot a shotgun.
I was supposed to go to that until
you jumped ship and went down to the Right Side Radio. Okay, thanks, JP, because
actually,
now I have to go shoot a gun that I've never shot before.
That. You've never shot a gun before?
I had a BB gun as a young adult, and we shot, like, Coke cans at my grandpa's farm. Out there in Blount County, for all of you listening, out there in Royal, Alabama, just outside of Oneonta, around Sneed, because I know that there's some Right Side Ruffians there. Spent a lot of time out there. Love it. But, yeah. So, I don't know how tomorrow's going to go, but just to circle back to Kalen DeBoer, I have already planned my outfit, and it is appropriate for a clay shooting outing.
You're not going to walk up like a slob wearing a...
No. I'm going to be appropriately dressed. Will I be able to appropriately shoot a shotgun? Probably not. But I am out there to support the Downtown Rescue Mission and all the great work they do in North Alabama.
Well, listen, as long as you can't do worse than Tim Walz in that that video. If they want to talk about Trump going to McDonald's being staged, hello. He couldn't even load the shotgun. He didn't even shoot the shotgun in the video.
Man, as someone who has had the job of preparing people for interviews, like preparing the people that I work for interviews or photo ops and things like that, you think you would walk your guy through it so it wouldn't be, this is the first day you've ever seen this thing, here's, you know, how you do it. But no, they didn't do that. What are they doing?
They have no idea what they're doing. Also, we're getting texts in when you said Metal Monday. I completely forgot somehow. It slipped my mind that we already have a Meatloaf Monday. And that's one of Phil's favorites, the Meatloaf Monday. It would take some convincing for him to change that. James from St. Clair County also said, Judas Priest, not a good look for a Christian conservative radio show. Okay, buddy.
All we
said was the name. we got another text talking about Judas Priest. All we said was the name. We're not propping it up. Somebody just said a text and we said the name. We're not supporting Judas Priest. I've never even heard of that band, to be completely honest with you. Which I'm making
it long before you were even a twinkle in anyone's eye.
So Right Side Radio by no means is endorsing Judas Priest. Let's get that out there. Emily,
Phil's never going to let me come back. I thought I had a good relationship with Phil, but I may have tarnished it today.
Emily, the greatest karaoke song is I Got You Babe by Sonny and Cher from John Paul from Huntsville.
You know, the duets, they do well. You know, B-52's Love Shack is a really good karaoke jam. You know, people get behind that big time.
Well, we're going to try to get into some politics talk on the other side, and even though the karaoke talk, apparently a lot of people like to
people get passionate about their jams, JP.
It's a very passionate point of topic, apparently. So, but we're going to get more into the state of the race and wrap up the show, send you on home here on a Turbo Thursday. So make sure to keep it locked right here on Right Side Radio. This is JP alongside Emily Hayes helping fill in. We'll be right back. And we are back. Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Phil Williams is out today doing a speaking engagement. And he's got a lot of speaking engagement the next couple of days. But he'll be back tomorrow, so don't worry about that. And we're joined by Emily Hayes from The Dale Jackson Show. You can hear her from weekday mornings, 5 to 9 a.m. up on WVNN in Huntsville. Getting back to the state of the race a little bit here, I want to talk some predictions that me and Emily may have for this upcoming election. I don't even know if Emily has any hot takes that she's been brewing up ever since, you know, we're getting close to this election time. But I know I have a few of things that I think may happen that a lot of people are not predicting to happen. One of them, I personally think Nevada is going to turn red this upcoming election. Ooh. And, you know, people were talking about Nevada being, you know, one of the Democrats' safest battleground state. And I see a lot of Democrats on social media in particular going above and beyond trying to say why the polling is wrong in Nevada. I mean, look at these polls right now from Real Clear Politics. The average Nevada, and Trump has a 0.7 lead. That is the third highest lead he has amongst the battleground states. Michigan and Wisconsin, 0.2, 0.2. Pennsylvania, 0.6. North Carolina, 0.8, which I think that polling will be a bit skewed. I think Trump will win North Carolina. I'm not so sure why the North Carolina, you know, it's probably because of governor's hurricane. Race. Governor's race, yeah, and how that bad guy. Republican candidate Mark Robinson.
Mark Robinson?
Yeah, I believe that's probably doing contributing to that a lot. But I think that stuff matters to a certain extent, but I still ultimately think people in North Carolina will go out and vote for Trump, you know, even if they don't vote in the governor's race or don't vote for our Republican governor. I still think the Republicans will go out and vote for Trump. But I think that may be contributing to North Carolina taking a dip. So I think he will win North Carolina by larger than, you know, what poll say he's up by right now. But back to Nevada, I think Nevada will turn red. You look at the polling, the fact that it's even close in Nevada, like not even the fact Trump has a lead, the fact that it's even close in Nevada, and you could say that for a lot of these battleground states, I think that is trouble for Kamala. And it's been a long time since a Republican has won Nevada. I think this upcoming election will break that streak, and I think ultimately Nevada is turning, you know, redder. Obviously, Trump is up there right now, but I see a lot of Democrats try to say, look, Nevada has a big illegal immigrant population that contributes to the infrastructure and the construction and so forth in the state. So that could turn off a lot of people, you know, because Trump is for, you know, mass deportations of illegal immigrants to a certain extent. So that may turn off, you know, people within the state because they know how much illegal immigrants contribute to the infrastructure and helping build the state. I don't know. I'm not so sure about that. I think, you know, the polls saying that it's 0.7 and Trump outperforms the polls, I think he could win Nevada by a decently, you know, considerable amount. So that would be my main hot take or prediction for this upcoming election. I think Trump's going to win Nevada. Emily, do you have any hot takes or predictions you got for this upcoming election?
Like I said earlier, I'm always hesitant with polls, like cautiously optimistic when looking at them because of the margin of error and things like that, and what we've seen in the past. And, you know, if it comes out that they were close to it, they were pretty on point with it, once the election's all said and done, then I think some faith is restored in the polling companies and things like that. The only thing I feel really confident talking about is Michigan and Wisconsin. I don't think he turns them.
Wisconsin stay blue?
I think narrowly misses there.
Yeah. That's
really, like, I could see Pennsylvania moving before I could see Michigan and Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Michigan and Wisconsin, even with the polls, I mean, he's got a 0.2% lead, which is well within the margin of error. And I guess right. You could say that about Nevada, too, obviously. But, you know, 0.2, that's pretty much a toss-up right now. You know, Wisconsin, I think, you know, Michigan and Wisconsin are the two I'm a bit hesitant and, you know, unsure of. But then I also fall back on, look, the fact that it's even close, Trump may outperform the polls. And, you know, the fact that it's even close, he may win those states because of just how much better he does than the polls. We just don't know. But I will say this. I really hope that it doesn't come down to Pennsylvania because we may not know till Saturday. Some people are saying Pennsylvania's, you know, with how they count votes. And I'm not saying that, you know, there's anything necessarily fraudulent in the fact that they take that long to count votes. Obviously, people have their beliefs on what happened in 2020. But nevertheless, it's going to take a long time for them to count those votes. So I really hope it doesn't come down to Pennsylvania.
JP.
Yeah.
What year were you born?
2003.
So you don't remember the hanging chads.
Oh, I know about the hanging chads.
The dimpled Chad.
I did a school project on it, so I know all about it, but no, I was not alive for that.
I don't want to live through that again. I don't want to live through any kind of scenario that was like that again. I mean, if we have to, we have to, kind of thing, right? You have to go count things by hand. And then I really hope that it's, best case scenario in my mind is that this is a close race, but is a clear winner race, and it's not going to be something where we have to go to hand counting things and all that stuff. I think about that from multiple angles, but one is I don't know how much more the country can take.
Yeah, and Phil talked about this yesterday of wanting sort of an election therapy of the Republicans win in such a convincing manner that it sort of, you know, cleanses the plate and gives a refreshing, like a breath of fresh air of not only did the Republicans win, not only did Donald Trump win, but he won in such a convincing manner that, you know, we can almost, you know, there's hope that this country can turn its way around and correct some of the wrongs that have gone, you know, gone away under this administration.
Yeah, I wish the go with me here for a second. Mm-hmm. I wish the American people could say to all politicians, political parties, etc., go outside, pick a switch, give them a swift spanking, say, get it together, and let's try this all again. You know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the way you hold folks accountable in politics is you don't reelect them.
Exactly.
You know, you don't reelect them. So, but sometimes that doesn't seem to really make the party straighten up, act right, you know? And that's when you go and pick a switch.
Yeah. Well, I also make this prediction, too. We were talking about how long it's going to take Pennsylvania to count votes. I'm going to make a prediction. We're not going to know the winner on election night.
No, it's going to be a very, 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 very long.
I hope it's not terribly long. Like I said, I hope it doesn't have to come down to Pennsylvania. I hope Trump can win enough battleground states to, you know, Pennsylvania is sort of out of the picture. But I haven't done the exact math of which particular states he would have to win for that to be the case. But yeah.
JP, what if we're totally wrong? Let's just flip this for a second. What if we're totally wrong and this is not something that's taking a couple of days to figure out and we don't know until Saturday? What if this is, you know, 9:30 at night, you got Wolf Blitzer crying into a latte and being like, "God, this is it, guys."
I hope so. You know? And, you know, which
and we know and we can all go to bed and we can wake up the next morning, God willing, and go on about our business and operate freely and get a break.
Yeah. Well, by the way, Argentina just had its elections and had 99% of the votes counted in 6 hours. So that shows you
it can
be done if we're not stupid and do elections the right way. But we're going to get more into that on the other side and give some more of our predictions. Let's talk about these polls, how long it's going to take before we know the winner. All that on the other side here on Right Side Radio with JP and Emily Hayes helping fill in for Phil Williams. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
And we are back here on Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Phil Williams is out today, but you got JP here alongside with Emily Hayes helping fill in today, and hopefully we are doing a good enough job. You haven't changed the channel yet. There was no spectacular film monologue today, but other than that, I feel like we've done a perfectly adequate job in terms of Dale Jackson terms himself. But we got a caller on the line, Jeff Rowe from Indiana. How you doing, man?
Doing real good. How are y'all?
We're doing good.
Good.
Good. Hey, you know, the thing about it's worrying me about all this stuff is like in the 2020 election, you know, they changed all the election rules and stuff illegally, basically. That, like in Pennsylvania, the judges and the AGs changed the way that people voted, and that's reserved solely for the legislature. And, you know, with this redistricting in Alabama, I'm not so sure how that works out either, where they just out of whole cloth, you know, change the and make a new district, you know, just because they say, well, we need it's not fair or whatever.
Yeah, and so, we're seeing that in District 2 right now. It's a crucial race coming out to the wire. They gerrymandered that to get a certain Democrat in there, and it's kind of troubling to see, like you said, the federal overreach in terms of that. And, you know, we had Attorney General Steve Marshall in studio yesterday, and we talked about how, you know, Wes Allen did such a good job of getting people off the voter registration that need to get off, and then the Biden DOJ sues in response to that. And they're telling on themselves here, and the election integrity is embarrassing. And it's all from the Fed. The states, like Alabama, are doing what they need to do, but then the Fed comes in and messes it all up.
Yeah, and I guess it's the same thing is going on in Georgia, too, isn't it? I guess heard something the other day where a judge had changed some election laws there in around Atlanta, I think.
Yes.
So,
yeah, and it's troubling. But you see countries like Argentina, and they got 99% of the votes counted within 6 hours, and it's like, man, if a country like Argentina can do it, the leader of the free world, the United States, should be able to do that. We shouldn't have to be waiting days and days to find out who the president is. But it's easy if you just have voter ID and have common sense in these voting laws, and we don't have that right now.
Well, there's common sense. They got enough sense to know they need to throw the election.
Yeah,
that's
true. Yeah, yeah.
But it's like it's like the last election. Like I say, it was done unconstitutionally. Like in Pennsylvania, where they changed the election laws, Mike Pence should have, which it was my old governor. He should have thrown out those votes there because that was, any place where that somewhere other than the legislature changed the election laws, they should have had to throw that out and been recounted or been re-canvassed, I guess you'd say, had to re-vote over because we had an illegal election, and I'm hoping we don't have the same thing happen again this time because I'm not going to accept an election that's not legal.
Yeah, and I'm praying for that, too, that
I think we all are. I think we don't want to see a repeat of any of the things that happened with the last election. And I want to believe that our elected officials know that any kind of shenanigans or tomfoolery that resembles the things that happened in 2020 could do way more harm and damage to our country than their guy not winning. So I believe it's all of our prayer that this goes smoothly.
It's always funny that it only happens in one direction is what gets me.
Yeah, that's
maybe,
true too.
Maybe Republicans need to fight fire with fire one of these times.
They could be more proactive instead of reactive. I feel like maybe that's plagued Republicans in the past is the reactive stuff instead of being proactive ahead of things and all that. But time will tell, Jeff. Time will tell.
Yeah. Yes, it will. And I'm anxious to see what's going to happen if Trump is elected, what the left's going to do if they start trying to burn down cities again and everything and just do basically a riot. I think they should, the forces necessary should come out and put an end to it immediately instead of letting it happen like it did last time.
Yeah, well, I agree 100%. Well, Jeff, we're gonna answer some texts real quick and then wrap up the show. So I hope you have a good rest of your day, brother.
Have a good one, bud. See ya.
All right, well, we got some more texts in the text line here real quick. I want to answer. First, Emily, you got some critiques from how you pronounced Royal, Alabama.
Royal.
Emily, say Royal again. It's pronounced by older Blount Countyans, Royal, as if the Y is silent. So
Royal?
I don't know if he's trying to say Roll or Royal, or I'm assuming probably Roll. Roll.
I was four when I was first introduced to that part of Blount County. My grandparents moved out of Eastlake in Birmingham because it was going downhill in the late 80s. They were the last people to, last of the original families on their street to move, and they bought a farm out there in Royal. Roll.
Roll. Roll. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Roll. I feel like that's, which I grew up, obviously in Alabama, and it was always Brewer. It was not Brewer. Brewer. It was always Brewer. And my Pennsylvania cousins, when I say stuff like that, they're like, what are you saying? Sorry. Brewer,
Listen, we have our way. Y'all have yours. Okay.
We got another text in, too, from John from Huntsville. Said, JP, the reason they don't count the early vote and the mail-in votes in first in states like Pennsylvania is because Democrats need to see how far behind they are after the day of votes to see how many pre-made illegal votes they need to add to the early vote bag so they end up being the winners. Well, I mean, there's been some suspect stuff. John from Harvest said, Florida can report its election results the same day. Any state that takes longer than 8 to 12 hours is trying to cheat. Yeah, and, you know, even if they're, you know, I don't go down the narrative that they're trying to cheat, but the incompetence too. Like, mm-hmm. I think a lot of it just boils down from just simple, you know, government incompetence. You know, obviously, I'm not trying to say the left does not want illegal voters voting in this country because they're suing states like Alabama when they get them off the registration and off the roll. So obviously they want illegal votes to count because they typically go the Democrat way. So I'm not saying that there's something not nefarious going on in that manner, but also I think there's just a lot of government incompetence with Pennsylvania, the way they count votes. Like, I say it again, countries like Argentina and I believe Thailand as well, they have elections recently and they get almost all the vote in hours. We are the leader of the free world, right? Obviously, if recounts need to happen, they need to happen. But if states like Alabama can do it, states like Pennsylvania should be able to do it, states like Nevada should be able to do it, state like Georgia should be able to do it. Mm-hmm. The nonsense of we are the leader of the free world, we are the United States of America, we should not be waiting for days to find out who won the presidential election. It's ridiculous.
And forgive my ignorance on this, but I mean, in my mind, we know this is coming up. We know there could be some issues in certain areas. Should those areas not already have people on standby? If people trained, ready to go, in the loop, ready to step in, start hand counting if they need to.
Yeah.
Like, we should be prepared for that, right?
We
know that if we have a lot of stuff going on at the radio station, in the group, not just WVNN, but with our sister stations as well, we know when it's an all-hands-on-deck situation, and we plan for it. Mm-hmm. Being prepared.
I know a lot of it, you know, like I said, just comes down to government incompetence, and they're not prepared beforehand. They're not able to look ahead and be prepared in states like Pennsylvania, where unfortunately it looks like this election very well could come down to Pennsylvania. And if we are in a situation where it comes down to Pennsylvania and we don't know who the president is, some people are saying it may take up to Saturday to find out who won the election. That is what, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 days? That's nuts. And it should not be that way. It should not be that way to where, I mean, how long did we have to wait in 2020? I mean, it was pushing a week, right? A little over a week, if I remember correctly. Like, it should not be that way. And
there's no excuse for it.
No, there's not. And they used COVID as an excuse last time, which Steve Marshall was talking about yesterday. What's going to be their excuse this time if it takes so long, if it even takes longer? It's like, what is their excuse other than people are going to be suspicious that something nefarious is going on? Even if you want to gaslight your own citizens, like, oh, you MAGA Republicans, you conspiracy theorists, you think we're trying to steal the election, blah, blah, blah. No, I mean, if you take days to count votes when you're, like I said, for like the fifth time, you are literally the leader of the free world and we can't even count votes. People are going to become suspicious. What's going on? Why don't we know who won the election? It's ridiculous.
I say 24 hours, and I feel like that's
pushing
generous.
It too. Yeah,
that's generous. But I think after 24 hours, you invite the criticism. You invite the critique of how your stuff is going. We're really lucky here in the state of Alabama that things do run smoothly. We've got good leadership for that. But man, oh man, I think after 24 hours, you're going to be begging for sympathy from the American people if you're making them wait.
I'm obviously I'm not that old. I'm only 21, but all the elections.
Not that old.
Okay, I'm pretty young, so obviously I've not lived through many presidential elections. But other than 2020, I woke up and know who the president was the next morning, and I feel like that should be how it is. You know, you should wake up the morning after the election and know who won. You should not have to be waiting so long, and you know, there's not going to be much of an excuse, you know, this time. I mean, they introduced the, you know, mail-in ballots was always a, like, I don't know when it was introduced. I don't think this was a new thing they introduced during COVID, obviously. But I think I think they, you know, obviously that's becoming more prevalent. So that may be a reason why, you know, absentee ballots and mail-in ballots, early voting is becoming more prevalent, and they can't open those votes until or in some states until Election Day. Obviously, some are being counted right now, like in Pennsylvania, early voting is being counted. I believe in Nevada too. But the mail-in ballots, from what I understand, aren't open until Election Day. So I think that may be contributing to it and how they go about it. They're not going about it in an efficient manner, and that takes, you know, days to find out. And then they hand count, and it's just a mess. All that to say, government incompetence. You know, states like Alabama do it right, and you have other states where the election's coming down to, and they're not being efficient, and they're being incompetent, and it's making everybody wait for, you know, who won the presidency, unfortunately. But we're going to wrap things up on the other side, take you on home here on a Turbo Thursday, and finish up our thoughts on the state of the race right now, 12 days away. We're coming up right up on it. Stay tuned. And we are back here on Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, we're wrapping up the show today here on a Turbo Thursday. It's been me, JP, filling in for Phil Williams alongside with Emily Hayes. And you can catch Emily every weekday morning from 5 to 9 a.m. up on WVNN on the Dale Jackson Show, where she tries her best to keep Dale his job, which I know I've seen it firsthand as a... it's not an easy job to do. So
it is. It is rather tough, but someone has to do it since you left.
Well, I didn't do it very much. I was just there for long for the ride. Let me just put it this way: I made sure the conversations that were off air did not go on air, and he could keep his job. Let me just put it that way.
Man, we're grateful for that, JP. Let me tell you.
Well, I wish I could have John Paul's grades, but for some reason, some of the texts are getting chopped up. I don't know if the larger texts are coming in sequences, but from what I see from John Paul's text, it says, Emily Hayes is today's winner with a nearly flawless A double plus, and your prize is a big Roll Tide. Also, in case anyone cares, JP got a boring A plus. Oh, okay, so there it is.
Womp, 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 JP.
A boring A plus. I got A triple pluses a lot this week, so I guess I was due for a boring A plus. We also got a text in from JT from Lacey Springs, said liberal early voting is in Bama as well. I just saw a mail van in a cemetery this week, man. That deserves some laughter. That was pretty funny. Jim from Grove Oak, Alabama. He asked, did Yappy get his name from the X-Files episode with Peter Boyle in it? First of all, I would say that that's funny. He called him Yappy. But I have to admit, the first time I met him, after I was introduced to him, the next time I saw him, I thought it was Yappy as well. So I called him Yappy to his face.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if he heard it, but I assume he's talking about
called everything Yappy. We got some mail here for him that came in for Haffy, Haffy.
Well, here's the thing: he's a radio talk show host, so I think Yappy makes the most sense to people when they hear it the first time.
I see.
But I don't even know what he's talking about. The X-Files episode with Peter Boyle in it, is there a Yappy? And that, hold on, I'm going to have to do some research.
You got to go to the old Google machine.
Peter. Can you hear my keyboard?
JP's fingers typing furiously in the background to check this information. Hard-hitting news here on Right Side Radio.
Yeah.
Is it Yappy after the X-Files episode?
I don't think so. I think it's just, you know, him mispronouncing his name. I don't even know if he did that. I wonder if he did that on purpose or if he was genuinely asking if he thought that his name was Yappy and that was a genuine question.
Or maybe it was talk to texting, and that's always a slippery slope.
Maybe he should save that question for Yaffe tomorrow morning during the Yaffe program. I think that would go well for him.
Oh yeah.
But other than that, wrapping up our thoughts on this day of the race, I think the consensus here is Trump
vote.
Well, yes, that get out and vote. But from a poll perspective, I think it's pretty clear that Trump has gained a lot of momentum, and right now it appears the polls are showing that he is likely going to be the winner. Like I said earlier, do not let that discourage anybody from voting. Obviously, here in Alabama, you know, even though it's a safe state, people will need to get out and vote for reasons other than, you know, this guy to win, this guy to win. We need to exercise our freedom to vote because a lot of people don't have it. A lot of people put their life on the line to defend it. So get out and vote no matter what. But with that being said, I think Trump is going to win this election. And I know I said it earlier with him winning Nevada, I think he's going to win a lot more battleground states than people expect. And I wouldn't be surprised if we have a big red wave that Trump wins pretty convincingly. I don't know about you, Emily.
I don't. I see it being very, very close with Trump just pulling out the win. And it's not, I know some people think that we get down on Trump sometimes, but it's not that. I really just feel like it's that close. It's just that close, and it's going to take everyone getting out there to vote. Everyone should get out and vote all the time whenever you can in elections that come your way, be it local and federal and all of that. But it's really just so close. I think that's what we're going to see, is that when we wake up the next morning, if some of us get to sleep, because I'm afraid that some of us that have this for a job won't be sleeping much.
Yeah, I don't anticipate that night. You know, I will probably stay up. I don't know what I've got to set a time limit for myself of if it's not called by then, go to bed. But I feel like I'm going to be up late.
It's a very responsible thing to do, old man JP.
Yeah, right.
Old man plot.
Old man.
Yeah, no, but it's going to be. I'm honestly frightened to see Dale the next day, because if Dale is team no sleep, then it's going to be ka-ch-ka-ch-ka-ch in the background of him opening up Monster energy drinks, and he's going to be all jacked up on that, and that's going to be a fearsome thing to behold. But we're all going to get through it together, and at the end of the day, I've heard people on this program say it before, and I'll echo it at the end of the day, you know, we've got our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and we will make it through whatever happens in this country.
That's for sure. And I think it's important for people to pray for the country as well. You know, prayer goes a long way, and you know, whoever outcome, you know, whoever wins this election, obviously I want Donald Trump to win this election, and I'm praying for that outcome. But even you know, if you're listening and you're not supporting Trump, I think it's important to pray for this nation, that no matter who the winner is, that we, you know, we're able to have a peaceful transfer of power, because either way, it's going to transfer from Biden to Kamala or from Biden to Trump, to have a peaceful transfer of power, and that both sides within this country are able to accept the results of this election and to peacefully go on about their business, and that nothing too crazy happens, whoever wins the election, and that peace can be upheld within this country. So I think even if you're not supporting Trump and you're not praying for a Trump victory, I think it's important for you to pray for the nation regardless, that no matter the outcome, peace can be upheld within this country, and, you know, democracy can withstand. I think that's a big part of it too, is prayers that we have an election that is trustworthy, and that you know, we are the leader of the free world. Like I said many times during the show, our elections need to represent that, and we need to have trustworthy elections. So pray for that as well. But Phil Williams will be back tomorrow, so make sure to catch him back here from 2 to 5 p.m. And remember, there's more of us than there are of them, so stay in the fight, and we'll see you tomorrow.